Hello and welcome to this week's episode of SBC Podcast, soon to be Experience Share Podcast, in the middle of rebranding this right now. With us today is Rick Franzi. He's an author, he's an entrepreneur, and he is a consultant and founder of Renaissance Executive Forums. And he consults with businesses and with CEOs, mostly in mid-market CEOs. So with that, welcome, Rick.
Thank you, Rashid. It's great to be on your program. I'm excited to speak with your audience today.
Awesome. So Rick, let's start by talking about one thing that both of us strongly believe in, which is the peer groups and the importance of the peer groups as a way to learn and as a way to grow and maybe a way to keep accountable. Can we start by talking a little bit about that and how you got into that a little bit as well?
Certainly. So I'm the founder of Renaissance Executive Forums, Orange County chapter, which is here in Southern California. Renaissance Executive Forums is a global community that's been around since 1994. I've been partnered with them since 2007. And we're a global community of over 2,000 CEOs headquartered in Lima, Peru, where we believe business owners and CEOs have to keep evolving. There's an evolution to their life, and we are very much in support of that evolution, both professionally, but also personally. From a wellness perspective, we believe that work-life balance is a myth, that it's actually, you could burn yourself out by using work-life balance because work takes energy, life takes energy. What's missing in that equation is you. And so we work with our leaders to make sure that there's time for them to be present for themselves. We don't believe selfish is a bad word when it's really thought about as self-care, so that you avoid the burnout effect of having everybody in your life needing something from you and not having the chance to nourish yourself, mind, body, and soul. That's, I think, one of the critical, unique differentiators of the global community of Renaissance Executive Forums.
Yeah, awesome. As they say, like whenever you board the plane, they say, put on your oxygen mask first before you can help other people. Right. Because if you're passed out, there you cannot be helped to anybody. Right. And I think that analogy applies to business as well. So thank you.
Kevin Lawrence wrote that book, Put Your Oxygen Mask On First. Kevin Lawrence is a part of our community. We've used him as an expert to share insights with our audience. And it's really his IP that we built a lot of the work-life you kind of balance based on his teachings and his experience working with high-performing entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Great point, Rick. So unpacking a little bit of that self, because I mean, I like that you tackle that cliche of work-life balance and what gets missed in there, like you yourself. And we have a fellow EO member here that wrote a book within the year called Work-Life Passion. And then I like that approach. So you just reminded me a little bit of that. His name is Matt Galinsky. So it's a great book as well about that, like making sure that you don't forget yourself in the in that equation. But from your perspective, Rick, how can an entrepreneur find that time or protect that time for herself or himself? And what are some strategies they can use to strengthen that self and that mindfulness and in order to be in the best position to help others?
A lot of the members in the Renaissance community are servant leaders. And so they feel a little guilty in making sure they protect the time that they need for themselves. But we make it okay for them to understand that as they've scheduled all the strategic things that they need to do, whether it's a board meeting, an investor pitch deck meeting, soccer for your daughter or son, there is time on your calendar that doesn't get passed over for you to do the things in your life that create abundance for you, for your life, for your soul, for your well-being. Exercise many times is that for many of our members. Spiritual enlightening is that for many of our members. Time in the forest, wherever they go to get renewed and renewal, has to be planned and has to be treated as important and strategic for their long-term well-being. Because we make the point with our members, if your cup is empty, you have nothing to give to anyone else. So you have to keep your metaphorical cup full in order to be able to meet the needs of those that you are a servant leader for, or your young family, or your sick parents, or whatever it might be in your life that requires your energy. you have to make sure you've recharged your battery. And so protecting the me time is not being selfish. It's self-care, because it's really to be more abundantly available for others in your life.
Right. I like that juxtaposition of self-care and selfish. Totally true. And then also, as the adage goes, show me your calendar and I'll tell you your priorities. So definitely, if it's important, it has to go in the calendar, because if it doesn't, then other things will creep up and will take that time. And I know also one of the other things that you talk about is the idea of critical mass and the power of critical mass. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
So when I was in the corporate world, and I have spent most of my career in the corporate world, I'd always aspired to be the CEO of the organization that I'd worked for. And for the last 7 years of my life, I worked for a company which was a global manufacturing company, initially in sales and marketing, executive VP, and then promoted to be the president. So I had achieved the aspiration of my entire professional career. And as soon as I was promoted into that job, I realized I really didn't have the base of experience that would allow me to perform in that job as well as I thought I could. I had an MBA, I had all this experience, but you sit in the chair of the president or the CEO for one meeting and you realize that everything the company's involved in, good and bad, is now at your doorstep. Unlike when you're a functional manager and you can sort of dismiss some of the things that are being discussed because they aren't participating in your world. I didn't know how I could strengthen my decision-making skill set at that moment, but I went on a journey and I discovered peer groups. Mm-hmm. I found a group that had a heavy concentration of manufacturing companies. I joined that group. And over the tenure of time, as I grew the business, I grew myself. And what I learned was the time away from the business gave me time back in the business in the form of shortening my decision-making time, because I would vet my strategic decisions with my peer group. I was more confident when I came back about implementing it. So I was able to make that decision more quickly and then over time stay with it. Because any strategic decision that the CEO makes, it's a journey and it's always a straight line to the result that you had anticipated. And so being able to deal with the uncertainties of the strategic decisions by vetting it against an advisory board of serious, experienced, successful people who have nothing to gain from the decisions that the other individuals make, which is truly unique in the business world. It's hard for a CEO to get around anybody in their life that isn't kind of angling their advice for their own best interest as well as the best interest of the CEO. That's one of the unique things about an EO organization or about Renaissance Executive Forums. I found it so powerful that at one point we were at a retreat in Santa Barbara, which is a beautiful place to be on a retreat. And I had an epiphany that I would rather do what the chair of that group was doing than lead this manufacturing company. A job that I'd worked 20 years to get. Went home, talked to my wife, explained what I wanted to do. She said, and I remember it like it was yesterday, she said, it makes perfect sense. I eventually resigned from that position. And that's when I started in October of 2007 as a business partner for Renaissance Executive Forums, trying to give back what I had gotten from my experience being in the other peer group.
Wow, awesome. What a story. So Rick, what are some things that really like you liked about that particular role that you're like, okay, I gotta switch to doing this? Yeah, that's a huge decision right there. How did that happen in your head to where it's like, okay, is it what maybe your strengths, your qualities? What clicked? What clicked exactly?
Good question, Rashid. So let's go back to when my wife and I got married, and this was in the 1980s. We did on our honeymoon in Hawaii, we were sitting at the beach and we were working out our life plan. We're both planners. And I wrote at that time that I wanted to be an entrepreneur and own my own business, even though I was working for a Fortune 500 company as a salesperson. And I thought I'd own like a selling company, you know, I don't know, some type of a sales trainer company. That's what I had in my mind. And over the 20 plus year career I had, there were times when I thought it maybe was time to leave the corporate world and start my own business. But I never found the passion around the other thing that was stronger than the desire to keep managing my corporate career. And so I never did it until that day in Santa Barbara, when I recognized this is what I want to do for the next chapter in my career, is help other CEOs and business owners to improve the performance of their business through improving themselves, evolution of their skill set, knowledge base. To me, it just seemed like the logical way to use the years of experience that I'd had in a way that as you get older in the corporate world, your experience actually becomes an asset versus many times in the corporate world, a detriment, yeah. a disadvantage.
Yeah, awesome. That's great. So you actually saw someone doing it and then you're like, okay, that's what I would like to do, which is, you know, I guess the important thing about us doing what we do and doing it right. And then obviously that person was doing something right. But circling back to the peer groups, I know some of them are moderated. They just reminded me now, some of them are moderated like that by someone like you with the experience, been there, done that, has the battle scars and not speaking from wounds. They're speaking from scars. And then you also have like other peer groups that are just volunteers and you're just taking turns moderating. Which, of course, there is pros and cons, and it's usually boils down to like the cost model and what have you and whatnot. But really, what I would like to ask you from your experience, what are some good criteria for people to select a good peer group? Because they're not all equal. And there is like obviously those that are just end up being a social club. And maybe that's for some people, but for some of us, we want a little bit more than that. We want growth, we want challenge, we want accountability, we want things. So obviously it's different for everybody, but from your perspective, what are some ways people can approach that? Someone who's that, like as this adage goes, it's lonely at the top or at the corner or wherever you are. How can someone like that approach it?
So Rashid, you know, I've written three books. My first book was on the powers of a CEO peer group. It's called Critical Mass, the 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. I realized when I got into this profession, I read everything I could find and that there was no one book that was dedicated to why tens of thousands of entrepreneurs and CEOs join these kind of groups and the value that they get. So I wrote it really as a former member about the value that I directly got or the value that I saw given to others in that group. And I came up with 10 of them. And in the book, I talk about the different types of peer groups that people can attend. I think every leader should be in a group of their peers, whether it's self-facilitated or professionally facilitated. Something is better than nothing in this area. And there is actually, in my opinion, a universal power available to people. I think of it as a superpower, which is this peer learning. You know, in business, experience is the best teacher. But some business lessons are best learned vicariously through the experience of other entrepreneurs or business owners. We as the human condition can learn from other people's experience. We don't have to touch the stove to know the stove is hot. Now, we may choose to touch it anyway just to prove it to ourselves, but we really intellectually don't need to touch it.
That's been part of our evolution as human beings in general.
Right. Yeah. And so the key for me, for anybody that I talk to is, first of all, figure out who your peers are. You may want to look around. If you're not the top boss, it may be other leadership people at your level. But if you're the CEO or business owner or president, you have no peers in the company because you're the top of the pyramid. So you have to look outside of your company for other peers. But get around people who have experience that you can learn from, but also who can learn from your experience. Because peer learning and peer groups are a contact sport. You don't learn much from sitting in the stands when you're in a peer group, whether it's self-facilitated or professionally facilitated. The energy comes from the fact that all the people in the room are engaged in the challenge or opportunity that one of our members have, thinking, based on what I've done in the past, what experience can I share with them that would be helpful? And the beauty is what we talked about before, Rashid, nobody cares really what you decide for their own self-interest. They just want to help you. And so that unfettered advice sometimes can actually cause people to get a little upset. You know, we say going to a peer group is where you go to get your answers questioned, because people aren't just going to say, oh yeah, that's a good idea, Rashid, because you know, they don't want to make you mad.
They're not your yes people.
That you don't control their lifestyle or their income stream. And they may have walked in the very same or a very similar path. And, you know, hey, you may want to do that. I did something similar. Here's what I learned. Do with it what you want. So,
yeah, that is true. That is true and totally agreed. I love the, I know you have quite a few publications and a couple of books and, but I love the title, Killing Cats Leads to Rats. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, and actually the book came out 2 years ago and it was a combination of me giving a talk around this subject for years to the point where people kept telling me, you know, you ought to write a book about these stories. What is the meaning of killing cats leads to rats? And it really came back around this year across the world with a global pandemic. The story is about the Black Plague that took over Europe in the 1300s and how people did not know the cause of it. And for a variety of reasons, they began to believe that dogs and cats could have been the carriers of this illness, didn't know disease at the time. And so misguidedly, they killed as many dogs and cats as they could, figuring if they got them out of the village, that they would be healthier. When in truth be told, it's believed to be the fleas on rats, and the dogs and cats were sort of the predators for rats. So if you diminish the dogs and cats, you get more rats, mm-hmm. you get more fleas, the plague gets worse. That's not the unintended consequence, because this book is about how to avoid, reduce, or mitigate the negative effects of unintended consequences of your strategic business decisions. The reason why the Black Plague was used in the book, the unintended consequence is if you go about 200 years earlier, the Pope of the Holy Roman Empire was the first pope who put in writing, historians can find, what's called the Vox in Rama, that the black cat was the vessel of Satan on earth. I don't know why this pope didn't like black cats, but he wrote this. And so the religious people believed that black cats were bad because they were Satan. It started a condition around believing the cats, at least the specific cat, was bad, which a couple hundred years later fed into this belief that all cats.
Still, that superstition still exists.
And it's the same day. Whenever I used to give this talk in a keynote, when you know we do it in person, I'd always ask, does anybody know somebody who still sees a black cat and maybe avoids it? And it's surprising how many people. I don't think Pope Gregory thought that would be the case necessarily, but that's why it was such a good title for the book. And now, you know, pandemic's on everybody's mind. People resonate maybe with that condition that happened in Europe all those hundreds of years.
Super, super relevant. So I'm sure we could probably do quite a few more podcasts about each one of these topics that we touched on, and we couldn't really dig any more deeper. But in the interest of time, Rick, is there something that you wanted to share with the audience? And we hope you and I can do another podcast to talk about like entrepreneurship, how it's approached internationally versus the US and other fascinating topics, like digging in a little bit more in the killing cats and the rat and how it leads to more rats. But anyways, going back, circling back to you, is there anything you would like to share for this one episode that didn't come up?
So if there was any advice that I could give to anybody that's listening, regardless of what stage of their career they're in, it is what we touched on earlier, which is no person is an island. And on those strategic decisions that you have to make, get outside of your comfort zone of advisors who you've been using to help you get to the point you are in your career. Expand the group that you listen to include people who may disagree with you, or you know when you tell them what you want to do may be disagreeable in a professional way. Because in that methodology of hearing voices that you don't want to hear, you can avoid what is all too often very common in society now, which is confirmation bias.
Yeah.
And that is believing stuff that agrees with the way you think more than things that disagree with you. And so you have to actively seek out dissenting voices just so you don't miss anything. That's one of the through lines of my work around unintended consequences, is hearing people who might tell you something you need to hear to factor into the decision that you make. Because we only have so much time and energy. If we can take some of the trial and error out of our business performance or our personal career aspirations, we can get from zero to the goal a little easier and maybe in less time because of it.
True words of wisdom, Rick. I mean, you know, it's nice in the comfort zone, but nothing grows there, including us. So it's been a pleasure. And I hope we can do this again and continue the conversation and unpack some of those concepts that we couldn't unpack today. With that, thank you, Rick. And listeners, be on the lookout for future episodes. You can listen to previous ones or on our blog at SBC or sbchecks.com or your favorite podcast listening device or application. And otherwise, be well and be kind.